Welcome back. I always look forward to this program every holiday season. I don't know how many years we've been doing it now. But James Arthur is back tonight. James, of course, the man who has done probably more research into a certain type of mushroom than anyone else on the planet. He is the man who brings us so much magic of the holidays in terms of its historic roots and how mushrooms actually played a very important role in some of the early and later Christmas cards that we'll be looking at tonight. Hopefully you're online, be able to load that up, look at James Arthur's name, look right underneath that and load that page. Lots of fun things to look at. He is back, and let's see if he's online. Are you there, Jim?
I'm here, Jeff.
How many years have we been doing this?
I don't know, 4 or 5. I think it's 5.
I think it is 5. It's fun.
Yeah.
And every year you learn more and bring more to the table. Is there no end to this mushroom madness?
That's what I always keep wondering. I keep asking myself, oh, my God, I can't believe I figured this out. This must be the final thing to figure out. Then, sure enough, nope.
See, when they find the Ark of the Covenant and open it up, you know what's going to be in there.
Well, of course, the mushrooms are the manna.
Amanita.
That's correct.
And it's a remarkable thing that you have done. I really mean that when I say it. It's not too many people that can dig and connect the proverbial dots as well as you have. And, you know, accept or disregard what James Arthur will present tonight. It's sure fun. You can't take that away from the man. So what's happened that's new in the last, say, year since we've talked that tops your list? I know you're moving to larger and larger paradigms of understanding, so kind of give us a little serving of that, if you would.
Well, what's happened in the past year is I met an extraordinary guy named Jack Herer, and he's a Jewish scholar, but he's an avid studier and researcher and a really intense researcher of the Amanita muscaria mushrooms, and was also turned on to this aspect of it by discovering the works of John Allegro, particularly the Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And so when I met Jack, I was doing a show down in L.A. and giving two lectures 2 weekends in a row, and one of Jack's friends came to the show and said, "You have to meet Jack Herer. You have to meet Jack Herer." And so I said, "Okay, I'll stop by on my way home." And so I stopped by Jack's house on Sunday night as I was heading back to Northern California, and I wound up leaving 3 days later because when
missing time, they call it.
Oh my God! When I met Jack and we started talking, the things that we had in common and even the things that we didn't have in common that were parallel research, it was mind-blowing. And so both of us became extremely edified by meeting each other. And as a matter of fact, when we started working together, we started uncovering things by leaps and bounds.
Uh-huh.
I had many years ago really given up studying biblical scripture because, you know, I read it and I felt like I had a pretty good understanding of it. You know, I knew it was about the mushroom and I knew there was a lot there to uncover. And I'd spent thousands and thousands of hours doing it, you know, in my life. And I had sort of put it down and put it away for a while because it's so intense and so involved. And, you know, I probably wouldn't have gone back into this particular area because there's still so many things to uncover in the rest of the world. Without you know, just going into the Abrahamic religions again, and as a matter of fact, I was rather disgusted by them really because of all the things that had happened in the Bible and things that were apparently you know, really not very kind in human nature-wise, and the Jehovah God seemed to be, you know, pretty blatantly mean and so it was really weird. So, you know, I took a break from it, and I got away from it and started studying, you know, Egyptology and Hinduism and pretty much anything but that. But when I met Jack, we got together, and he said, "You have to read Song of Solomon."
What is it? Song of Solomon?
Yes.
Okay.
Song of Solomon, or also known as the Song of Songs.
Who wrote it?
Well, it was written by mushroom priests. You know, long before, way before it was ever put into the Septuagint or any of the Bible, it was in the Jewish text.
So you're talking a couple thousand years.
Yeah.
At least.
at least.
Okay.
Probably 3,500, you know, something like that, maybe. And it's a rather unique book because the Rabbi Akiva, who I wasn't familiar with when I met Jack, and he told me that this rabbi was the most highly respected scholar of all time at the Jews, and he lived in about 100 A.D., and he said that you could do away with every other book of the Bible and any other religious book. The only one that you have to keep and the most important one of all that you could never destroy, never let go to waste, is the Song of Solomon, or as they call it, the Song of Songs or the Cant of Cants.
All right.
So, you know, and I've read it before and stuff, and I knew there was mushrooms and stuff there, but when I sat down with Jack and we read it, it was a whole other thing happened. Somehow, the two of us working together and the understanding that both of us have made a perfect match, and so we felt like we could translate the whole thing, literally 100%, knowing everything that the book is talking about. Well, the Song of Songs is a really deep piece of work, and there's whole college courses devoted to it across the country, just deciphering what it's talking about.
There, I had no idea.
Yeah, and several of the things are very well documented, and different opinions of high rabbis and scholars and priests, and you know, many people have written about it. Especially when you start to really get serious in ecclesiastical seminary, you know, that's one of the things. And now read this and tell us what you think this is about. Well, because it all deals with this relationship, this very strange relationship, and there's a lot of things like dreams happening in his head, and you know, all these strange references like, you know, your nose, he's praising his beloved, and he says, your nose is like a tree of Lebanon or a cedar of Lebanon. You know, weird things like this. So, you know, as you can imagine, people have interpreted it many ways.
I would think with that kind of a description, yes.
Yeah. So there's a lot of sexual innuendo implied in it, too.
This is a family program.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm just saying that...
I know, go ahead.
If you go read it, you can't help but notice this. So anyway, we started looking at it and understanding that it's talking about mushrooms, and we know that. It became the epitome of man's relationship with these plants and the ecstatic states that they produce and the hell-like experiences that they can produce, the elevator ride between one and the other, complete with vomiting, and the guy walking out of his house, staggering around as if he's drunk, only he's beyond drunk because he's babbling to people that are in his mind or things that are in his mind. And
he's cosmic.
And he gets beat up by these guards of the city, you know, and all these weird things happen.
Right.
So when we started translating this, we were sitting in Jack's living room in Los Angeles, and his friend who introduced us, Jan Irvin, was there, and we all started talking, and another friend of theirs shows up, Joe Rogan from the Man Show, if you're familiar with that.
The what show?
The Man Show on Comedy Central.
I'm not.
He's one of the hosts of that show, and he was the host for several years, and the main host, or is, I guess, still, of the show Fear Factor. So anyway, he's a TV celebrity type guy, and he shows up, you know, basically to meet Jack, because Jack is a huge celebrity. He's the author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, which is he's sold over $1 million around the world. He's known as the grandfather of the hemp movement.
Okay.
He's the one that uncovered such things as the Hemp for Victory video that was put out by the United States government where they made everybody grow hemp.
That, you know, and people to this day don't understand that there are hemp stamps that farmers applied for and paid for so they could be allowed to grow hemp, which is without question one of the most utilitarian crops on the planet. It's amazing what that plant can do.
Well, it can even do bioremediation of the soil, which is remove pollution and
right.
Things like this.
It's a gift from the universe. It truly is, yeah.
It is one of those plants that we like to think of in the Book of Revelations where it says, and the leaves of the trees will be for the healing of the nations.
Right.
And we fully believe, and we're putting our thoughts where our pins are, that the plants are going to be our only source to truly be able to heal ourselves.
What is it that we've done in the Amazon rainforest? I think we've evaluated 1% of the plants in terms of potential benefits.
Oh, yeah.
Something silly.
And there's hundreds of them that are, you know, endangered already.
Sure.
And this is an insanity that the environmentalists have been, you know, really using at the forefront for a long time. Well, you know, it's really, really true. You know, the plants are the things that can save us.
And it's totally true. Hold on right there, James, if you would. We'll be right back. It's our Mushroom Christmas program with the amazing James Arthur, and we shall continue in just a couple of minutes. Lots of pictures to look at. Don't forget, go to the homepage at Rents.com and load all the amazing images that James has brought tonight to share with all of us. Just look under his name. It says Mushroom Images. Be right back. Jeff Rents with James Arthur tonight. It's our fifth annual Mushroom Christmas program. And there is a whole lot more to this than we're able to touch on tonight, but we are going to look at some amazing pictures and images from the past and, well, perhaps some from the future as well. Okay, let's wrap up this first segment and jump into our wonderful treasury of pictures.
Okay. So can you hear me better now, Jeff?
Sound like you're right next door.
Oh, good. Okay. So I started for the last 10 months working on a new book that's called The Most High, Plants of the Gods and an Exploration into the End of the World as You Know It.
Nice short title. I like that.
So we've been working on that since February, since I met Jack, and he's a brilliant scholar. So when we put our heads together, some of the things that we've been uncovering are absolutely amazing. One of those things is the symbol and the mark of God in the book of Revelations, and the symbol and the mark of the beast in the book of Revelations, the 666.
What is the symbol of God?
It is the caduceus.
Okay.
And the caduceus is also the symbol and the mark of the beast, the 666. And that's a long program, but that's a really good one, actually. We just did a 2.5-hour slide presentation, over 200 slides, in Amsterdam at the High Times 16th Annual Cannabis Cup,
mm-hmm.
and we revealed all this information there. And High Times Magazine is supposed to release this video that we did.
Good, I hope so. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it's really good. 200 images, we exploring the history and the origin of the caduceus and why the caduceus is the symbol and the mark of the beast.
Some people might not know what that is. Our younger listeners out there, tell them what the caduceus. We've all seen it, folks.
We've all seen it as the staff entwined serpent that you see when you go to the doctor. It's the symbol for medicine, or the symbol for drugs, or the symbol for medical. There are several origins of it, but I'm not gonna get into that right now because we don't have time. But it's serious stuff. And when we found this as we were interpreting the Book of Revelations, like I said, we first did the Song of Solomon, then we did the Book of Jonah, which we went back to the original Hebrew to do all these interpretations and to understand what the book is really talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We went back into do Jonah, and we discovered that this is all about mushroom experiences too. Then we went into and we tackled the Book of Revelations, and when we did that, we had no idea what type of stuff we were going to uncover in going back to the original ancient Greek. So this has been quite the experience in the last year, and it's truly added to the Christmas information and the whole overall picture of this thing, because in the Christmas image we have the representation of the sun, of the chimney and the world tree, and the climbing of the world tree and the World Tree as the axis mundi, or the axis of the universe, which is also represented in constellations and the stars, and represents the out-of-body experience, the shamanic out-of-body experience
right.
brought on by psychoactive plants, where you go to the gods and you bring back information into the physical world.
Now, it's important. Let me just say one thing real quickly. While you all who are online walk through us tonight as James Arthur is our tour guide and takes us on this marvelous walk through these images, it's not, Jim, is it something that people consciously thought about when they were creating all of these images we're going to see? It's really the result of it being a piece of the culture. It just exuded itself into the very structures of the artwork and the other symbolism. It wasn't, in other words, somebody didn't say, we're going to make this look like such and such because that's what it really means to us and it's kind of a secret. It just happened. Or did it work both ways? You tell us.
Well, this is the rediscovery of ancient knowledge. And there's a lot of people who will say, these are things that we've long forgotten. But in actuality, these things weren't only forgotten, they were repressed. They were exercised as devil worship and evil. And anybody who talked about these kind of things was considered a witch and put to death.
Got barbecued, yeah.
So this knowledge, as it comes out to you today, is a rediscovery of some of the information that used to be quite well known on the planet. In fact, there were a lot of people that were very intelligent, but for many, many years, the churches put people to death that were intelligent
right.
or the bright people.
Well, it's often said that knowledge or information is the most powerful commodity of all, and governments and power structures will release knowledge when they want people to react one way, and they'll restrict knowledge on the other hand, when they want to control. So it's, I understand thoroughly. And I was just thinking back, we have to go to our break here. The first time you were on the program, and it was even before our Christmas program, I think, but talking about all this and how much you have learned, and again, accept or otherwise, the science and scholarship of James Arthur and his associate. It is fascinating, and it's very logical. So stay tuned. We're going to break here. And be sure and visit James Arthur's website and take a look around. His books are there. Lots of remarkable things to see and do. So we'll carry on and begin to look at our images, our image gallery, our stroll through some amazing visuals and concepts as we continue in just a couple of minutes. Okay, and welcome back, talking with James Arthur, and gee, these are some gorgeous images you brought to us this year. Thank you in advance for sharing all these. It's great.
Sure.
And these are all going to be in your video when you eventually release it?
Oh yeah, these are all in some of the videos already, I believe, or some of them are in.
Yeah, we've seen some are old friends, some are new. Shall we commence the tour?
Sure. One good thing that we know about Christmas is Christmas brings us back into contact with secret information that has been either repressed or repressed or kept away from us for a long time. And once we discover all the things that are hidden in the Christmas story,
right.
Christmas myths and traditions, we can recognize that these same things are hidden in all of the religious texts all throughout the world. For instance, the first thing, or as we just talked about a few minutes ago, the Caduceus,
right.
is the Greek letter X, but it's pronounced Chi, and it's literally a cross with a snake tacked on it,
uh-huh.
an X. One side is a stick, the other side is a snake. So this is representative of the name of Jesus, and it's the first letter of the word Christos in Greek. And the X is, this is how we get the letter Xmas in Mary Xmas. So Xmas is not actually a derogatory thing or a slant on Jesus or something like that, that people think, how dare they put Xmas on there? They should put the name Christ there or Jesus or
so
whatever.
So it's X is the first letter in Greek, which is Chi, Christ, in Christ, that sound, C-H.
Right. Yeah, so, it's also the number 600, which plays into this Mark of the Beast thing. And,
right.
And the last letter of Christos is S, which is the snake. And also these both are representative of the caduceus. And so the snake on the stick is the caduceus.
Look, scroll down to image collection number 6, all of you online, and you'll see exactly what James is talking about now. See the X at the top of the stick and the snake wrapped around the tree, and there are other images of the caduceus as well. But that's very interesting.
Right, and this image also shows the world tree, which is where we get our Christmas tree from.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come back to this one in just a minute. So I just wanted to get across that little part about Xmas is actually the name of Jesus, represented Christ, actually, represented with the X, is not a strange thing, and it is a normal thing, and for the Greeks, the name of Jesus was often represented by the letter X. So our
I had no idea. Fascinating. Okay.
So our first slide, slide number 1, shows us the wobble of the earth on the left. The actual earth as it spins around in a day to night thing. Every day, 24 hours it takes us to make one revolution.
Right.
Then it takes us 365 days for this orb, as it sits here, wobbling in one direction, to pass around the sun. Now, keep in mind that the sun, as you can see in the picture, is on the left-hand side of the globe. If you put the sun, if you follow the orbit of the Earth during the 365 days, when it goes around on the other side, the opposite side of the globe would be lit. So this picture here, having most light in the northern hemisphere, is something around the summer solstice.
Okay.
Or the longest day of the year in the north. And as you can see, as the sun is on the northern hemisphere, the day is longer. Then when the sun moves around onto the other side, we move around onto the other side of the sun, then it's mostly in the southern hemisphere, and that is the shortest day of the year. Now, this shortest day of the year is the day of Christmas. This is where we get the winter solstice from, and this is why Christmas is held on December 25th. This is also why many of the world's gods were born on December 25th, because many of the world's gods are represented by the sun in the heavens, or the actual, our sun.
That makes sense to ancient man, especially our earlier cultures, to look up and there's God right there.
Yes, the light of the world is the sun in the heavens. And as the days get shorter and the nights start to get longer, primitive man started to realize that darkness was creeping into the earth. And they associated light with joy and happiness and, God and life. And they associated dark with death and evil and darkness and destruction and all this. So as we go through our 365-day cycle of 1 year, the sun has various stages of difference between whether it's giving us light for a small amount in the day or a long amount in the day, depending on whether the sun is in the northern or the southern hemisphere.
Sure.
So as it moves further south, it comes to a point on December 31st or 21st, which is called the winter solstice. And at this date, the sun appears to stay still in the sky. It doesn't move north. It doesn't move south. It stays exactly where it is, as it were dead, entombed for 3 days. After this 3 day in the tomb period, the sun on December 25th moves 1 degree north again, and the world comes back to light, and man recognizes that the days are getting longer, and the sun has been reborn, and the world is saved.
Our tendency is not to give ancient cultures the credit that was due to their observations of the heavens above us and their ability to project these things.
Right, and our tendency, or the tendency of those who have been in power for these thousands of years, has been to restrict this information, occlude this information, destroy this information, sequester this information, condemn as evil this information. And so it's no wonder that they say that, you know, Jesus was born on December 25th and that's it, but you don't hear anything about the fact that the sun is the reason for the season. And the birth of the Son of God is the rebirth, the yearly rebirth of the sun from its 3 days in the tomb. So this is our first clue and our first secret thing, and it has to do with something called astrotheology, or the study of the gods as described in the heavens or in the constellations, or observed in the movements of the planetary bodies and the constellations in the heavens. And so this is astrotheology is where we get the word astrology. And, of course, that's that evil, bad thing of the devil. Everybody knows it's condemned as heresy and all this, and you get put to death if you practice this.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. But
Thank you.
Well, actually, I guess it depends on where you live.
All true.
Yeah. There are still Islamic countries where if you even think about something like this stuff, you're off with the head, you know.
Or something. Okay, hold on. We'll pause there and take a look at the images. Go ahead and scroll down and enjoy them. We'll be back with James in just a couple of minutes to continue. Fascinating walkthrough, and it gets better every year. But he's here for our Mushroom Christmas program. Be right back. Okay, Amanita muscaria, the magic mushroom. Much, much more since our first program with James years ago has occurred. The knowledge he's offering tonight is, again, extraordinary and does trace back throughout history, the history of not only Western culture, but all basic successful cultures on the planet. Okay, James, let's go right ahead.
Okay, so what we're talking about here with the movements of the planets in the heavens, this astrotheology, is one of these secret things that has been supposedly forgotten or condemned or repressed or whatever, and you were murdered or put to death if you practiced it. We all know that the secret societies of the world have been primarily known for teaching several things. The first thing that we know they taught was reading and writing. And not surprisingly, this is another thing that was condemned or forbidden by the church for 1,500 years, was you couldn't learn how to read and write. And particularly if you're a woman, you can't learn to read and write. But so reading and writing was taught in the secret societies. And the next thing is mathematics. Mathematics was also taught in the secret societies, because knowing math and studying math was another one of those things that was forbidden, and you were put to death. Another one of the things that was forbidden, and that the biggest thing that was taught in the Egyptian and other secret societies, is the thing called astrotheology, or the study of the gods and how they appear in the constellations and the movement of the planetary bodies of the heavens. So these main things are those three. But the other secret thing, the most deepest secret that you don't usually even get to, and the most oppressed, repressed, and forbidden, is the study and the knowledge of plants. Now, we even know that these three tiers of learning in the secret societies were only that which was taught on the surface. And as you get in deeper and deeper into the secret societies, you have more and more access to information. And the highest secret is the knowledge of plants. So this is why we talk about the mark of God being the caduceus, because the caduceus is a representation of the knowledge of the plants. So the first picture we looked at shows the sun and its yearly cycle, and how we use this to direct our attention to the heavens rather than to direct our attention to a person being born on this day. So these knowledge that we're talking about here replaces really the dogma of somebody being born on a certain day.
Or it could augment it.
Yeah, depends on
enhance it, depending on your viewpoint.
Okay, so the second picture here, we see picture number two, shows the three stars of the belt of Orion. Right below those three stars is another big bright star, always known as the brightest star that ever shone, the brightest star in the heavens, and a star that you could even see during the daytime. Now, there's only one star that follows all of these descriptions, and that is Sirius. Sirius is the star of Bethlehem. Now, as we discussed the sun moving to the southern hemisphere more on the winter solstice, moving back north, also when it sets in its deepest, furthest south position for 3 days, the three belt stars of Orion has turned itself in the heavens counterclockwise, and the three belt stars are lined up directly perpendicular, pointing straight down to the horizon. Now, right below where they hit the horizon, right there in that spot, is where Sirius rises. Now, the star in the east gave notice and declared the position and the location of the birth of the sun. And exactly in this spot on the winter solstice in December 25th, right exactly where Sirius rises, later on in the night, is the exact same spot where the sun rises. So the three wise men, pointing to the star of Bethlehem, Sirius, the three wise men, by the way, the belt stars of Orion, are known in the Oriental astrology as the three kings, or the three wise men of the Orient.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the three belt stars of Orion are the three wise kings, the three kings of the Orient. And these three point to the star of Bethlehem, which points to the rising of the sun, the birth of the sun, on December 25th. So this solves another interesting riddle of the three wise men, of the star of Bethlehem, and again, the birth of the sun in the heavens. Now, if we move on to picture three, we see the Amanita muscaria mushroom. There in the middle, we have what's called the Formosa variety, which is a bright yellow one and occurs mostly up in the northeast United States, up under the birch trees up in that area, is this Amanita muscaria mushroom variety Formosa, which is bright yellow, and when it dries, it turns a brilliant gold. On the top of the cap, it turns into gold. And if you look at the picture up in the top left of your screen, where I'm holding out a disc, a cap of a mushroom, it looks literally like metal. It looks like gold. And it also has these channels in it that look like blood vessels or veins or smoke billows, or if you look at the picture to the right of the actual sun, you can see why they called this the Son of God, and they believed that the sun was incarnated in its sun in the mushroom on the earth. So throughout alchemy, you have the dualistic suns, the sun in the heavens and the sun on the earth. This is why we get this. So here we have the mushroom as the sun. So the birth of the sun, God, is the birth of the mushroom. And also, the mushrooms grow in the winter months. So December 25th is a prime time to go look under the pine trees in most areas of the world, and you'll likely find Amanita muscaria mushrooms, which are the brightly colored, either yellow or red, with white spots mushroom underneath the tree. And this mushroom is the Christmas gift, the secret Christmas gift that's, if you take the wrapping out of your mind off what the Christmas gift is and you find out about the mushroom, then your mind is opened and you have discovered the gift of the gods. So in the picture below that, we have Santa Claus coming out of a chimney or going into a chimney with 1 foot out. Now this 1 foot symbol becomes very important all throughout the mythologies of the world because the 1 foot represents the mushroom. The mushroom only has 1 foot on the ground.
Okay.
And since the mushroom is the god and the mushroom is anthropomorphized as the gods all over the world, many of the gods are represented with 1 foot. You'll see pictures in India of the Hindu saint sitting on a throne with 1 foot out or 1 foot exposed or 1 foot behind the other foot. These are all representations of this. Santa Claus with his 1 foot coming out of the chimney here is a representation. Jesus in the picture coming out of the tomb with the 1 foot and wearing the red and white is another representation. Now, also these the shamans of the old world, and as well as today, the priests and the popes in the Catholic Church and all over the world, dress like the mushrooms, and it's surprising to see how they have these hats that look like mushrooms, how they have these clothes and these robes that look like mushrooms, and it's not only found in their dress, but in the architecture of all the buildings, too. So,
you think there's still any of them participating?
Well, I don't know. That's a really hard question. I mean,
you haven't heard any rumors.
Well, I've spoken to people that know about it, but as far as you know, how extensively they get into it, I don't know. You know, how far they even know. All they've told me basically when I've run into someone that knows is, "Oh yeah, I know, but I can't talk to you about it."
They've actually said that.
That's right. They've told me, "I know what you're talking about, but I cannot talk to you about it." And it's obvious because.
Yeah, now, give me an example of someone who has said, I don't want any names, but what position would this person or do these people hold? And are they in organized religions?
Yes. Cardinal would be one office title.
Wow.
High 70 would be another office title.
Okay.
Priest. High priest. Or was it priest? Patriarch would be another one.
Okay. All right, I get it. I just wanted to find out the status of these people, the sources who have made these comments to you.
Years ago when I was still, you know, really trying to find somebody else that knew what the hell I was talking about, I went to a lot of people. And this is when I ran into people that told me, yeah, okay, you know, we know what you're talking about, but we can't talk to you about it. And at that point, once I ran into a few of those, I just said, well, I can see this isn't going to get me anywhere, and unless you... You know, you want to be initiated into some secret order, you're not going to find out about it. And even then, even if you're initiated into a secret order, there are just certain things that are reserved only for blood relations and blood lineage. And no matter who you are, if you join their society, they're not going to let you in on this type of stuff.
Wow, what a fascinating cosmology.
Well, you're basically a battery. You're like in the Matrix, you know.
Uh-huh.
If you join the Masons, you know, you're one of their... people, and yeah, you can make money, you can, you know, have lots of friends that give you lots of work, and you can make money in your town and your area and your business that you decide you want to take part in. But as far as really getting into the deeper secrets of masonry, you know, good luck, you're a battery. So,
okay, all right. Fascinating first hour, as always, with James. We'll pause and come back for hour number two. Lots more pictures to look at. Remember, these pictures will be up online. For you folks who want to listen to this program in the future at the archives, Soundwaves will make this available very shortly after the program tonight. And you can click on James Arthur's name and follow the pictures just by going to our past guests at rents.com. Okay, we're going to pause and we'll be back after this. Okay, welcome back. James Arthur is here. I'm Jeff Rentz, looking at lots of interesting pictures and hearing a most articulately expressed cosmology from James Arthur and his research and what it shows. And it's not to discount anything anywhere else. It's just another way to look at things. Nobody has all the right answers. But this is particularly intriguing when you look at the history and listen to the story and look at the illustrations. Very interesting. Go ahead, James.
Well, the picture that we're looking at shows Santa Claus at the chimney on one side and Jesus at the tomb on the other, both stepping out with one foot and wearing red and white. I guess Jesus' body is white there. But. So it's important to understand that Santa Claus isn't a real person. Santa Claus...
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. Christmas. Of course he's real.
Well, everybody needs to, I guess, cover their ears that wants to believe that Santa Claus is real. Because
we don't believe in the goodness of Christmas. We're in trouble.
I have to drop this this sad note on us today and tell us that no. But as a matter of fact, it's actually a joyous note because truly Santa Claus is not a person as we see in this picture, but truly Santa Claus is an anthropomorphized mushroom. Santa Claus is the mushroom Amanita muscaria.
Well, he's about a red and, as red and white as he can get, isn't he?
Yeah, he's totally red and white, and he's associated with the sun and all of the Christmas months. Now we see Santa coming out of the chimney, and the chimney is representative of the death and rebirth experience. The climbing of the world tree, or the climbing of the chimney, is the death and rebirth of the going to the heavens. So when you go to the heavens, you die. You take the plant, and it causes you to have a death and rebirth experience. Now the plant is the God that takes you on this out-of-body ride, and that's why it's anthropomorphized. And because you can communicate with the plant, men or people need to be able to associate it with something they can relate to, and this is why it's anthropomorphized as a person. Now on the right here, we see Jesus stepping out of the tomb, wearing red and white, standing on one foot. And I have to tell everybody one other thing here, is that Jesus is also not real. That Jesus is an anthropomorphized mushroom, and the story of the death on the cross is the story of death and rebirth experience. Just as Santa Claus comes out of the chimney, Jesus comes out of the tomb. Now in the book, The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, John Allegro, the world's leading philologist or language scholar from Oxford and Cambridge universities, told us this in a book in 1970, and unfortunately the book was sequestered and shelved and tucked away nicely by a publishing company who paid a lot of money to buy the rights out from under John Allegro's publishing company to the rights of the book The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And my friend Jack Herrer several years ago decided he wanted to reprint the book because it's very important. It talks about Jesus being a mushroom and how all the stories of Jesus are anthropomorphisms of the mushroom, life cycle stories of the mushroom, and all of these things. So he wanted to...
Now, without getting into a big debate, because I want to look at a lot of these pictures, it's quite clear that we know an awful lot about pharaohs of ancient Egypt going back several thousand years. We have certainly an abundance of historical records about the man Jesus, and so on and so forth. So let's just leave that on the table as you presented it, as you see it, and I don't want to push people away from hearing the rest of your presentation.
Okay. So John Allegro, his book was purchased by, the rights to publish the book was purchased by a publishing company who shelved the book and told Jack and everybody else they will never publish the book again, it will never see the light of day again. And this publishing company happens to be owned by the Catholic Church.
Okay.
So moving on to the next picture, what do we got? We have...
The observatory.
The home of Santa Claus, which is the North Star, or the North Pole. Now, we just talked about Egypt, and we talked about Mesopotamia, and we're talking about the Celtic mythology, Germanic, and Norse mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this stuff plays into the Santa Claus story. And even the Mayans and the Aztecs and the North Americans, when these shamans take these plants and leave their body to go to the heavens, invariably their main destination is always the North Star. Now, if we see the way the stars go around the North Star here, it appeared to ancient man that this was the portal out. This is our ancient stargate here. And I think they may have also thought, okay, if I can leave my body and I can leave out of this universe, where would I want to go and how do I get back? So I think they head towards the North Star because they thought that they could find their way back if they just kept their gaze fixed. You go to a set solid point that you can see, then you can turn around and see it when you come back.
Okay, so the picture on the left with the concentric rings.
This is the observatory observing the circumpolar stars, the North Star, and all the stars going around it through the course of a night.
Oh, that's a time-lapse photography.
This is time-lapse photography.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really neat.
Gee, that's amazing.
Yeah, and this is the North Star. This is the shamanic out-of-body destination of people all over the world, in Egypt, in the Celts, Siberian shamanism, Mayan, and this is very interesting that they all go to this same place.
Uh-huh.
Well, two of the circumpolar constellations are Cassiopeia and Cepheus, who are the king and the queen of the heavens. And they are also, Cepheus is the Ethiopian king in the Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
as well, this is also Hertha and Odin in the Norse mythology, in the Celtic and Germanic. It's Odin, Wotan, Wodanaz. All these are the same, this one-eyed god that climbs the world tree and that searched for the Golden Fleece with Jason. He was one of the Argonauts.
Uh-huh.
Well, so this, the picture to the right, shows the square with the triangle on top, and it looks like a little beard coming off, and it says Santa Claus. Well, this is Cepheus. Cepheus sits atop the chimney, which you can see is in the constellation going down below that, which is the world tree. And Cassiopeia, Mrs. Claus, sits on the other side. Now, the myth is that Cepheus went and got the secret of the gods and is to bring it back to man. This is the way it is all throughout the Germanic and Norse lore, also with where Odin hangs himself on the world tree, Yggdrasil, to gain enlightenment. He trades an eye for inner vision, and there's all these stories associated with this, but this is where our story of Santa Claus climbing the chimney comes in. And everybody knows that Santa Claus, when he climbs down our chimney, brings a sack full of presents that he puts under the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these presents under the trees are the Amanita muscaria mushrooms, because under pine trees in nature, this is where you find them. If you go up and look in December, you'll go up and you'll find these mushrooms, brightly colored, big red and white ones underneath pine trees, because they're a mycorrhizal symbiont, meaning that the actual living organism of the mushroom isn't the mushroom itself. The mushroom is a fruit of the organism.
Mm-hmm.
The organism actually lives underground, and it's called mycelium,
mm-hmm.
and it attaches to the roots of the pine tree, and they live in a symbiosis where the mushroom feeds the tree and the tree feeds the mushroom, and they are beneficial to each other. Now, the mushrooms produce fruiting bodies underneath the tree, which are the mushrooms. The mycelium produces these mushrooms, which are the fruit. So if you look under the trees in nature, you're going to find these mushrooms. This is why Santa Claus brings a sack full of gifts down the chimney, because these same mushrooms are the secret food of the gods, the secret knowledge of the gods. They are the Golden Fleece, the Holy Grail, the Amrita. All of these different myths are told throughout the world, and many of them are associated with the mushrooms, either Amanita muscaria or Amanita pantherina, or even psilocybin mushrooms growing out of the cow pies and out in the valleys.
The little brown ones.
The little brown ones, yes.
Same kind of thing. Okay, now, for safety's sake, let us caution people not to run out in the woods and start eating these things.
Right, especially when they're young. And this is something important, too. Nobody should go pick any mushrooms after this show and try to eat them unless they really study it and they really learn and know what they're doing.
That's any mushrooms, folks. Any
mushrooms.
Yeah.
Because there's over 15,000 known mushrooms.
That many?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And there's several thousand that are toxic, deadly, and poisonous, and if you eat them, you will surely die.
You will go to the North Star.
That's right. And just as the serpent told Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, the day you eat it, it's like 24 hours on some of these mushrooms, and you'll be dead. But the Amanita muscaria mushroom, which we know now, and because of paintings discovered all over the world, the Amanita muscaria mushroom was the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Uh-huh. And there's the portobello mushroom, which is a crowd pleaser everywhere.
That's correct. And there's many, many wonderful edible mushrooms that are out there. That fortunately now they're coming into some grocery stores, I see, and people are actually getting a taste of some of this, which they never could get before. And I would highly recommend people go try some chanterelles and morels, because these mushrooms, as well as the boletes, are so wonderful tasting, and you've never tasted anything like them. They don't taste anything at all like the agaric campestris that we are used to finding in
the I've had the morel before, I'm pretty sure. How do you spell it?
M-O-R-E-L.
Yeah, well, those are around.
Yes, they are.
Not plentiful, but they are delightful.
They look like little brains.
Yeah, okay. All right, hold on. We're going to come right back and continue our picture tour. Rest of the hour with James Arthur, maybe a little bit more after that. We're going to have a special visit with geologist Jim Berkland a little bit later tonight in our third hour at some point regarding today's major earthquake in California. Jim Berkland predicted again one would happen, and he hit it on the money. So all that and much more coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Picture showing the world tree on the left. This tree shows snakes down at the root system and a bird up at the top, which is a connection between the heavens and the earth. This is where we get Mercury. Mercury had wings on his helmet. He could fly to the heavens. This is where we get angels. Angels have wings, and they are the messengers to the gods. And the gods climb this world tree. This is why Santa Claus goes up and down our chimney. The shamans in Siberia go in and out of the smoke hole of the yurt, and this is how they get into your house. This is how they bring the mushrooms in their sacks and put them underneath your tree.
Okay.
So then we have the caduceus on the right, which is also a representation of the world tree, and this world tree also represents drugs and plant drugs and the secrets of plant drugs, but we're not going to have time to get into that, unfortunately. But we see also the snake-entwined tree on the right. Now, this snakes and trees thing, this is all part of that secret knowledge of pharmacopoeia, which is one of the things that is kept from mankind. And instead, we're given poisonous substances under the guise of the health organizations who wield their symbol of the caduceus to control all of the substances that we can put into our bodies, all the way from the ownership of a license where you have the caduceus, you've sworn an oath.
Sure.
Take upon yourself the symbol of the caduceus, and now you can buy and sell drugs.
Pretty bad corruption of the whole thing. Pretty amazing.
That's right. So our next picture shows a secret painting from the Renaissance on the left that has a Christmas tree on the top and the single eye above the tree, which represents the mushroom, and the gills of the mushroom come out from the eye just like they come out from the roots of the tree to the right. Now, this particular tree... It looks like a combination, an ornamented tree that's half pine and half oak. This is because the Amanita muscaria and the Amanita pantherina grow under these two trees respectively.
Oh, so they've depicted both of them there.
They've depicted both trees.
How interesting. They made a composite tree because those two mushrooms grow under those two trees.
And if you look to the right, you'll see a picture of a mushroom that looks like it's been cut off at the roots or the stalk. And this mushroom here is a Psilocybe cubensis, which is a psilocybin-containing mushroom, and it's very obvious. On the left side, you see a bunch of caps of mushrooms that look like little Christmas hats or little stocking caps, and these are called Liberty caps. They're another Psilocybe mushroom. They're Psilocybe semilanciata. So in this picture, you have represented Amanita muscaria, Amanita pantherina, psilocybin cubensis, and the Liberty caps, Psilocybe semilanciata. All of the four main mushrooms that are known to be the gods, and actually the secret to the Most High is the combination between psilocybin and amanitas. The two mushrooms together produce the state of mind that we know as the Most High.
Uh-huh.
So to the right we have the Kabbalah tree of life, which is the pine tree. This one is turned upside down, and the crown chakra, the Kether, is at the root system. As we talked about earlier, the living organism is actually mycelium, and it lives in the roots of the trees. This is why the crown is at the root of the Kabbalistic tree of life here, and why we have the light, or the shining bright light of God, at the root system of the combination tree to the left. So this is all the tree of life and the Christmas tree, all the same thing. In the next picture down below, you see Jesus on the cross here, crucified to the far bottom right, and the mushroom that he is superimposed over the top of him. The particular cap structure shows us that this is a Psilocybe cubensis, one of the mushrooms that grows into the cow patties.
Where is it superimposed? I can't quite make it out.
Well, the cap of the mushroom is outlined by the black on the top.
Oh, okay.
And you see how it comes down about halfway and then
uh-huh.
turns white.
Uh-huh.
And then Jesus is the stem of the mushroom, of course.
I see.
The male. Because the
so mushroom. The upper 40% of this illustration is evocative of a mushroom
yes.
cap. Okay, with Jesus on the stalk.
Right. Now, to the far left bottom, you see the Gnostic or alchemical representation of Jesus as the snake. Now, there's a lot of people who tell you in occultic circles and Gnostic circles that Jesus is the snake because it was his same spirit of freedom or his same supposed teaching of freedom that was the serpent in the Garden of Eden who offered the fruit to mankind to enlighten them and bring them out of their blind observance and slavery to the God who would have them just obey. So above that, we have Jesus holding the cross, and above that, we have another deity nailed to a cross. Now, this particular one is Wodanaz, or Wotan, or Woden, which is where we get our 15th century Santa Claus out of Germany and the Dutch Santa Claus from, is these gods. Also died on the cross, also climbed the world tree. This is hanging on the world tree. The cross is the symbol for the mushroom and the death and rebirth experience. And this is, we have a couple of our first Christmas cards here, the one in the top middle and the bottom middle. The top one showing a cross with snow on it and the mushrooms at the bottom of the cross. Then we have the tree, the pine tree at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and the mushrooms at the base of the pine tree.
Very good. Okay. Those are two of the very earliest color Christmas cards. And take a look at those. We'll pause and come right back. All right, we're back with James Arthur, taking a look at the beginnings of Christmas and that mushroom that is so often seen in Christmas illustrations and so forth. Okay, James, let's move ahead. Number nine.
Number nine, we have a picture of the Annunciation, and since Christmas is the birth of the mushroom, we have to have the Annunciation, which is the magical experience associated with the appearance of an angel, who I think we talked before was an angel. The mushrooms are the angels, the wings represent the cap, but this Gabriel here, and he's often associated with Amini the Pantherina because he wears oak leaves on his cape, but...
Uh-huh.
This one here, he sees over the top of his head, is an obvious Amini the Muscaria mushroom.
Great big one, yeah.
A very big one. And so this is not the exception. This is actually the norm. We find this in all throughout these paintings of angels and their encounters with man. Right below this, we have the Amanita mushroom on the left in its state where it starts to break open the cap. And we have Joseph of Arimathea holding the mushroom, Jesus, in his hand. Now this... Jesus is known to be wrapped in swaddling clothes in the Christmas tradition, and the word swaddling means to constrict or to wrap around constricting. And the Amanita mushroom, there is an Amanita that's known as Amanita constricta because the sac-like bulb at the bottom constricts the stalk of the mushroom as it emerges.
Hmm.
So the Jesus wrapped in swaddling clothes is the mushroom in this depiction. Below that, we have another thing that just shows us that the Christmas presents underneath the tree, like these cards we showed earlier, are the hidden representative of the mushroom. And we give each other presents underneath the trees wrapped in boxes that we don't know, so we don't know what's in them, to make a mimic of what happens in nature. Out in nature, there's something there underneath the trees, but we just don't know what it is until all of a sudden we're given that information. Now, below that, we have associated on the left the chimney sweep. Now, the chimney sweep was also known as Black Pete in the Dutch and German traditions. Black Pete used to go around with Santa Claus, and Santa wasn't always just the jolly guy that would give you a treat, because if you were bad, Black Pete would whip you with a birch whip. And birch trees are the host trees for Amanita muscaria, so we all know why Black Pete would whip you with the birch whip. Now, the ladder here, it represents also this world axis or the knowledge of climbing up the world tree. And we have the chimney sweep sitting atop the mushroom with the ladder next to it as his reason, and the way that he found the ladder is the mushroom itself. So To the right, we have two chimney sweeps, showing that their ladder is a secret, and they're doing the keep it a secret sign in front of their eyes, or in front of their lips. So next one down below.
What's the four-leaf clover mean?
The four-leaf clover is a sign. If you find four-leaf clovers, it's likely that you're in the right place to hunt mushrooms. Well,
wow.
Actually, clover itself, but four-leaf clover is just one of those things, you know. It's one of those traditions that came along. I don't think there's any particular properties to finding a four-leaf clover, but I've found several, and I know, you know, everybody can find a four-leaf clover. It just shows that in the clovers is where you find that special thing, and this is why it points out to the mushroom.
Okay.
So number 13, down below that, we have a Siberian shamaness, and this one was photographed by the guys that went to Siberia to try to see if they could get some of the Siberian Amanita muscaria and if there were any differences between them. It's Jason Emmanuel Salzman. On the right, we have a...
Before you jump off that picture, for those who can't see it too clearly, she is holding in her left hand two big mushrooms.
Two big Amanita red and white spotted mushrooms while she is wearing her entire smock, her entire outfit that she has is red with white spots. And she's showing that she is the mushroom, because when you eat the mushroom, you have God in you, and you become God. This is what God means. It means having the mushroom within you. This is why we have the priest robe on the right that is, again, the Amanita muscaria, red on top with the white stem coming down. Now, below that, we have a picture of me holding an Amanita in my left hand, and we have a picture of the Statue of Liberty holding an Amanita. Or is that the torch? Or is that the torch of enlightenment? Yes, it is. It's the torch of enlightenment, the same thing that Apollo is holding in the picture below that. And the torch of enlightenment is the Amanita muscaria mushroom, because it looks just like a torch, and the red flaming cap and the colors on the cap also brought to mind the fires. And so it's the fire on top of the mushroom, and it's the fire above the stem, or the torch.
Got it.
Now, Thor, below that on the right, who is one of the gods where we get Santa Claus from, is holding Mjolnir, which is the hammer shaped like a mushroom, and he throws it to the ground in a lightning bolt where it magically reappears, and this is what ancient man thought the mushrooms came from, was lightning from the skies. Below that, in picture 15, we have to the left the Siberian shaman world tree, which is the same thing in the heavens. It goes up to the north star, and this is the...
Sure.
This is how the shamans climb up and down. And then we have a shaman to the right with their drum and their strange mushroom dresses. Below that, we have a picture of Woden on the left, Odin in the middle. Then we have the single eye of Horus, or the eye of Osiris. And we have below that Santa Claus winking, this one-eyed thing, this wink which transmits the secret knowledge. It's like transmitting the knowledge in the Pentecost, where the tongues of fire, or the language of the fire of the mushroom, moves across the wind, meaning spiritually communication between two people that don't even speak the same languages, and this is what can happen on the Amanita muscaria mushroom. One eye to look within, one eye to look without, and this is the symbol of shamanism, and it's also the symbol of Odin, Wotan, and Santa Claus.
All right, that's a good place to pause. Look at those pictures. Interesting. The wink. Okay, now we know where the wink came from. Be right back in just a couple minutes, and we have more pictures to look at. Hope you'll be there as we continue. Okay, I think we're back, and our last segment, some amazing pictures with James Arthur. All right, we've got a cuckoo clock coming up next, and I see three suspicious-looking mushrooms in it.
I don't see that. Where are we? Cuckoo clock.
25.
25? Oh, we skipped from 17 to 25.
No, the Santa was 24. The Woden... Santa?
Okay, it's actually number 16 also.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go back to number 16.
We doubled up on that.
Oh, I see two of them. All right.
Okay.
Okay, number 17.
17 shows Cepheus, who is, like we talked, Santa in the heavens, and he's wearing a green Santa suit with a what's known as a Phrygian cap or a Liberty cap.
Oh, yes.
The Liberty cap is the same thing that these mushrooms are on the top left, and they're called this because they free your mind from the delusional beliefs that are put upon you by government and religion. Right below that, we have some of the more famous books about this subject, The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross by John Allegro, Food of the Gods by Terence McKenna, and several pictures of nice mushrooms and Christmas trees.
They are pretty.
Number 13 below, or 19 below that, we have the Phrygian cap on the left. We have the coins, U.S. coins that depict the Phrygian cap or the Liberty cap. We have also a Italian coin or a Roman coin. And on the left bottom, we have the three magi, who are the three stars, wearing the Liberty caps.
They're all wearing mushrooms.
Right. Then we have Mithra in the middle on the bottom, and then Mithra on the right from Persia, and there are mushrooms everywhere, all over that picture.
Throughout ancient culture, mushrooms really were the keys to unlocking the doors to communing with and understanding the universe.
Truly, and when we knew about these keys, we had in our possession the gifts of the gods.
Amazing.
So the one right below that shows Adam and Eve with the Amanita muscaria depicted as the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
Right between them.
And it's this tradition of doing these a passion play about Adam and Eve that where we get the tradition of ornamenting the trees.
Uh-huh.
Right below that we have another statue of Liberty, or Libertas, on the left. And we have the ladder in the picture on the left bottom. And we have the bird on the top and the snakes on the bottom, which all of these things are representative of the same secret knowledge. And that's why we put it up there, the connecting of the heavens to the earth.
Got it.
22, it shows fairies coming down onto Amanita muscaria mushrooms. We all know the little people are the mushrooms. They aren't just associated with them. They are the mushrooms.
That is a spectacular picture.
That's a wonderful one. A friend of mine sent it to me from, he found it on the web somewhere. So below that, we show a bunch of ornaments, Christmas toys from Siberia, Germany, Russia, and the United States. And we have nutcrackers dressed as Amanitas. We have Santa Claus riding on a burro, just like the story has of Jesus' parents, and he is holding in his hand the Amanita muscaria mushroom.
That's just really remarkable. It's amazing to look at some of the older, especially the German ornaments.
Oh, yeah.
The blown glass ornaments, how many mushrooms there were.
I have some of them, and I absolutely love them. They're
yeah.
Great. So 24 is a repeat. Going on to 25, we have the cuckoo clock now with the mushrooms in front of it. We have more Christmas cards on the bottom and more New Year's cards that show the mushrooms and more toys. Many toys and all these things, you find them all over when you look up old Christmas. But I'll tell you, when I was in New York and when I was in Amsterdam, I went into a couple Christmas stores. Didn't find a mushroom anywhere except for some real stylized ones.
Now, that's an interesting comment because I was just thinking the same thing. When I was a kid, there were mushrooms in the cards, even on the Christmas wrapper, some of them. There were always mushrooms, and you say there aren't many around anymore.
Not many I saw. I wonder
how they've fallen out of favor. I hate to sound conspiratorial because they're so cute.
Yeah.
Why would people leave them out?
It's intentional, I think. So anyway, down below that, we have more Christmas cards, some wonderful old ones that people can peruse at their leisure. Below that, we have an interesting card that said, "Don't look back," and it has the caduceus in the middle with the mushrooms down the path that says, "Your life," and the arrow that points to the path that says, "No longer an option, has no mushrooms." So now, you have no choice. You know about the mushrooms. You can take it or leave it. The picture down below that shows Mercurius holding the two caduceae, because as I said, the caduceae are the symbol of God, and it is the symbol of the beast. Both of these, the snakes, and we don't have time to get into it, but maybe we'll come back and do a show about the caduceus itself.
Okay.
Below that, we have the phoenix, which is the life cycle of the mushroom. We have Mercury holding the caduceus, and his wings on his hat take him to the heavens. Mercury is the mushroom incarnate. Below that, we see the symbol of the caduceus on the forehead of the person. Now, this is how you receive the mark in your forehead. Either you know what the symbol means and you take it upon yourself and you have the knowledge and you own it, or it is foisted upon you in the case of the symbol to the right, where it's held above you as an authority over you, and it tells you only to take man-made poisons and chemicals rather than taking of the bounty of the earth itself and eating natural plants and natural organic herbs and supplements, and especially those plants that can teleport you into the heavens. The same pharmacratic inquisition which keeps the drug war happening and keeps all of these magical plants underground, that same thing is the one that has all the ads on TV telling you to take this pill to get a bigger boner, take this pill to have it longer, take this pill so you can go out into public and be the life of the party. And our drugs made by man that are patentable supersede all of the ancient remedies and all of the ancient plants and the knowledge of the plants, and they keep it from you.
Well, that's why ozone as a medical treatment is outlawed in the United States. It's cheap, it works, it's natural.
Well, you can't even put on an herbal supplement what it does. It's against the law, because then you're practicing medicine with herbs. This is what we call the pharmacratic inquisition. It's the sequestering of knowledge to the elite and keeping it from those that are not allowed to have it. And it's done with the sword. And it's this plight upon humanity and the restriction of plants that is the beast and the great beast in the book of Revelation. This is the spirit that is keeping the knowledge of God away from mankind. But in the end, the curse, which is by definition in the Greek a religious prohibition, the religious prohibition against plants will be released when the New Jerusalem arrives. When the New Jerusalem comes down, there will be no more drug war, and man will go once again back to the plants for the healing of the nations. And this is the great story of the book of Revelation.
Okay. That was a masterful presentation in 2 hours.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. And it's definitely fun. I love doing the Christmas thing because there's so much to it. Also, they used to dry out the mushrooms by hanging them in their socks and hanging them up above the chimney.
Above the fireplace to dry them out.
Yeah, because since they grow in the winter, in the cold, rainy months, it's hard to dry them. You got to get them somewhere hot, and that was the warmest, driest place in the house where they could do it during that time of the year.
Okay, again, the basic concept we want to underscore here is that we don't want people to go out and pick these things and just start lunching on them, because it's not going to do you any good. There are certain ways to prepare these things, and you have to be sure you're getting the right mushroom, and it's not to be trifled with, so I want to make sure that we mention that at least twice, as we have now.
Absolutely.
Very, very well, with no hesitation here. This is not to be messed with.
I'd also like to give out the phone number that people can call to order the books and the videos and all.
Please
that.
Please do.
That number is 559-877-7573. And you could also order it online and pay through PayPal at jamesarthur.net. But feel free to call and order by phone, and we'll give you a full description of all the stuff we have available. Interesting things like this that just might enlighten you to some of the hidden things that are not normally given to.
There are so many of them out there, too. In our last, we have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left, of the mushroom books up there that you have several of, you were able to reprint the Allegro book?
No, absolutely not.
Is that the original cover?
Yeah, that's the original. Well, that's the original U.S. cover.
Uh-huh.
And the original hardback cover. But, I mean, it was a huge selling book. There were a lot of books sold in that when it came out. And
probably find them in used book sales online.
That's right. eBay, Amazon has a used service. Barnes & Noble has a used service. And there's lots of other ones that are very good that you can look for. There are copies available, and you can find it, and I highly recommend it.
Okay, and your website again is James Arthur?
James Arthur, JamesArthur.net. Not .com, .net.
Okay.
And that's 559-877-7573.
Perfect. Now, your website is coming up with a black field and a white rectangle in the middle of it, so there may be a hang-up that may be being overridden by a lot of users right now. So,
yeah, probably, because that's the flash animation of the first page.
Okay. So if you're not getting in, keep trying and let it load there. Well, have yourself a Merry Mushroom Christmas, sir.
Thank you, Jeff, and thanks a lot for having me on the show again.
It's been a pleasure. By the way, are you presenting anywhere in the States soon?
No. The last one we did was the one in Amsterdam just recently, and now we're hard at the book, and we're trying to get the new book, The Most High, out by March.
Okay. All right. And the video is available now?
There's 7 videos available, and if they want to call or write us an email, they can get on our list, or we'll tell them all about them or find them on the web.
Great. Okay. One more time on the phone number.
559-877-7573.
Very good. All right. Well, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and it's great to be with you again, Jim. Keep up the wonderful work, and thanks for the great illustrations.
You too, Jeff, and thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
James Arthur, and enjoy those pictures. They are some beautiful pictures of Christmas cards from the 18th and 19th century, among other things. All right, we'll pause and come right back with more after the top of the hour news break. Thank you.